When it does, St. Mary's is there to help. The cardiologists at St. Mary's conduct over 1,000 cardiovascular procedures each year, including balloon angioplasty and stenting, catheter-based aortic valve replacement, and pacemaker and defibrillator implantation. Our team of cardiologists and clinical specialists work together to help you get back on the road to wellness fast. That's why our outcomes exceed state and national averages. And St. Mary's is the only hospital in the area to be certified by the Joint Commission for Heart Failure Care. More and more patients trust their heart to St. Mary's because they know when it comes to comprehensive cardiac care, we don't miss a beat. St. Mary's cardiovascular team has the expertise, experience, and technology to get you back into the rhythm of living life to its fullest. St. Mary's Healthcare System. Your health is our mission.
Your home of the Dogs in the Classic City. It's Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref.
All right, back here on the morning show, presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System, David Johnston and Tyler Head along with you this Monday morning. Hope you had a good weekend. Hey, forecast-wise today, not looking too bad. It's going to get up to around 68 or 69. We may have some afternoon rain, but it'll be clearing out of here tomorrow. Should be really nice. Sunny and 68, and then cloudy on Wednesday with a high of 67. Currently, though, depending where you are, 54, maybe 55. And, again, hope you had a good weekend. All right, time to bring in our man, Mike Griffith, from the AJC's DogNation.com. Mike, good morning. How are you today?
Doing well.
Thanks for checking in. We had the phone gremlins, but I think coming from your side, we appreciate the call in. So how was your weekend? You did softball. Were you at, I know you wrote a nice story about Alyssa DiCarlo from the Georgia softball team.
No, I wasn't there, but, you know, I covered Alyssa and Georgia when they were out in Arizona last year at that Classic.
Yeah.
And, you know, before they lost their pitcher, you know, Georgia might have been the best softball team in the country. And, you know, and I don't really – coming from covering Tennessee where, you know, the stadium is kind of near the campus and they've done some – I'm a little surprised that Georgia softball – doesn't get a little bit more love and attention. And I guess maybe that's because there's so many other great non-revenue sports at Georgia. That's probably why. But they've done such a good job for such a long time over there. And DiCarlo may be the best home run hitter in the country. Now, I think the Mississippi State girl hit another home run later last night against some bad team, Mississippi Valley State or something like that. And DiCarlo may be second in the country, but she's now the Georgia all-time home runs leader. She's en route to maybe becoming the SEC all-time home runs leader. Could set a single-season record. I mean, they don't even charge admission, you know, from what I understand. I mean, that's just such a great sport. I coached my daughters in it for 8 years of travel ball. And, man, the Georgia softball program is really just one of the best in the country year in and year out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lou Harris Champer has done an unbelievable job there. And it just kind of sneaks up on you that she has been here for 19 years. And you always expect them to at least be in a regional or hosting a regional. I mean, that's just how good they have been for a long time. And, yeah, the story there with Alyssa DiCarlo, very, very nice for sure. The Alliance of American Football.
AAF.
You're the AAF. All right, I wanted to ask you, too. It's kind of funny because you've got the Aaron Murray and Matt Sims conundrum, Georgia and Tennessee. What was like, so when Sims was at Tennessee, what was, you know, we get into this discussion about, all right, if one guy's way better than the other one, it makes sense to start him. If they're close to each other, if one guy's maybe a little bit better than the other one, is this one of those scenarios where you go with the guy that has the more local name recognition? Have you even been keeping up with the Alliance?
Yeah, I don't think that's, you know, I don't know how much of a factor that is. I can tell you, you know, the thing about Matt Sims, you know, and I was covering Tennessee
there,
he's a tough guy. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's a high IQ guy. He's very well respected by his teammates, but you know, he was at Tennessee, you know, in that Dooley era, you know, that was really, really just kind of the end of the nuclear waste to Lane Kiffin.
And right.
I'll be honest, guys. I'm shocked that Georgia's having Lane Kiffin at their clinic. Lane Kiffin and the agent must be paying Kirby and Georgia to borrow credibility. Lane Kiffin was a disaster at Tennessee in 1 year. And, you know, you look at the one-year record he had at 7-6, you say, well, that's not so bad. But what so many people don't realize is that he triggered an NCAA investigation that lasted 3 years and absolutely crippled Derek Dooley's ability to recruit up there. And some of the players Kiffin recruited were really, really bad character guys that wouldn't have gotten any SEC school and did some things off the field and in the dorms that carried into, you know, that really just created a toxic culture. And, you know, Derek Dooley was doomed by Lane Kiffin's aftermath, whether it was the NCAA investigation or the bad character guys that he recruited. It was the worst one-year hire in SEC football history. And the fact, but you know what? Kiffin's got a great agent, and, you know, he's got reporters that, you know, they'll do these makeovers on Lane Kiffin about what a cool guy he is. And
what did you think of him, though, when you were covering him?
He was a bad character. I mean, it was not just bad football character, but there were things off the field. Now, that was 2009. It's 10 years later. But, you know, you talk to people at Alabama and, you know, I'm amazed that he's on the banner for a Georgia camp. Just blows me away.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, I guess he is a Jimmy Sexton guy, right? Is that
the best agent in the world, you know?
And, so it all makes sense.
Take a look at, you know, they all and there's nothing. It's smart. I mean, I'm not blaming Jimmy Sexton. I mean, he's a millionaire maker. I mean, he's the most powerful guy in college football, in my opinion. You know, just because of the clientele that he wields and the influence, and he's doing his job. And you know, if he can help guys get jobs and make money, that's great. And Sexton clients work together.
Yeah,
that's part of the magic of it. And it's smart. And you know, at some point. I'm sure Lane Kiffin will get another chance. But, you know, what has he done down there? I mean, the first year he inherited a good team. I don't know what they do last year. Did they go 500?
Didn't go to a bowl game. They were below 500.
Yeah, but now, you know, we're getting into the Lane Kiffin guy. So, you know, it's a name. It's a guy with a great personality. Listen, on Twitter, he's entertaining. And a lot of sports writers are mesmerized. You know, Lane's the guy they want to be. But if you look closely at what happened, the opportunities and the jobs this guy's had, whether it was in the NFL with Oakland, whether it was at Tennessee, whether it was what happened at Southern Cal, you know, other than riding Nick Saban's coattails to success, I mean, what has this guy ever done as a head coach?
And by the way, this is, I don't know if this means anything or not, and take this stat for whatever it's worth, but when FAU hired Lane, FIU at the same time hired Butch Davis. And in these last 2 years, Butch Davis has actually won one more game than Lane has. But that doesn't
– Nobody talks about
nobody
that.
Nobody talks about that. It's just kind of strange.
Well, it's a name. You know, it's a name deal. And a lot of times with these coaching clinics, it's all about what names you can get. Now, who shows up? I don't know if you guys saw it. John Gruden didn't even show up at Tennessee. He was a last-minute cancellation, right?
Right.
But I'll bet you a lot of those coaches signed up thinking they were going to meet John Gruden. Right?
Right.
And you're competing for coaches because coaches control players, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about recruiting coaches to your clinic and trying to bring guys in that these coaches want to meet. And Lane Kiffin, as I said, he's a name. He's a person. He's a curiosity almost. You know, it's this, you know, pay money to go in the circus tent and see the act, right? Doesn't necessarily mean he's a great coach, but he's somebody, oh, yeah, I've read a lot about him. It's a curiosity. And I just think Kirby Smart and George is in a place where they don't need that circus act. I mean, you know, what Kirby has done in three or four years to me speaks for itself. I mean, if I'm a coach, I want to meet Kirby Smart. I want to meet the people on his staff. I want to meet the Georgia assistant coaches. I want to meet Coley. I want to meet Sam Pittman. I want to meet the guys that are developing NFL talent, that are recruiting the best players in the country. I want to know how do they evaluate. I want to know how they run their strength and conditioning. I don't need to know what some circus act in South Florida is doing. I don't need to know that. But you know what? These guys know football better than me, and if that gets more people through their doors – you know, that's fine, but to me, when I saw that, I was like, what in the hell, you know? Lane Kiffin, I mean,
well, yeah.
Really?
It is a name. You're right about that. Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com.
Yeah, Mike, while we're on the topic, can you give us a little more insight of exactly what goes on at these coaching clinics and what specifically these coaches do while they're there?
Well, I mean, I haven't been to one in years. Now, Michigan State, when Mark D'Antonio, theirs was more open. In the SEC, they're guarded. You know, they don't let the media in there. I mean, that would be an opportunity to hear the coaches talk. And, you know, you've always thought, well, why don't you just have a media guy sign up? And, you know, that would be kind of unethical to do that. I'm not saying that some haven't done that, but I haven't done that in years. But for the most part, you know, there's meetings and they talk about different techniques and they show film and practice habits and lectures and, you know, serve food and, you know, basically just say this is how we do our program, and then they have the guest speakers come in. And, you know, again, I don't know what Lane Kiffin's presentation would be. That'd be curious to me. I mean, how to run a program into the ground. I mean, you know, here's what I did to get Tennessee on a 3-year investigation. And here's what I did to escape a lack of institutional control. And here's what happened to my brother-in-law. And then here's what happened to, you know, what's the guy going to speak on? You know, I don't know. You know, maybe they should open it up and we can find out, you know, what seems to make this guy such a mesmerizing speaker. But for the most part, it's clinic stuff, but it's headliner. And you try to get the coaches from around your region to want to show up and come and pay money. And it's recruiting is what it is. You're recruiting high school coaches to come through the doors of your program. And I'm sure some of them go to more than one. I'm sure some that went to the Tennessee coaching clinic are going to want to go to the Georgia coaching clinic. I just don't understand why Kirby Smart would feel like he needs Lane Kiffin on his docket.
Well, I'm sure nobody's going to sleep through that PowerPoint presentation.
Well, who knows at this point. Hey, let's switch gears for a moment. Weren't you glad to see that the SEC and the Pac-12 might actually play each other in a bowl game? Actually will be playing each other in a bowl game, it sounds like, out in Las Vegas. I like this. I like that they're coming together since it's not something that happens all the time.
Yeah, you know, I don't know where, you know, the Pac-12 is, I don't know where the Pac-12 is at, guys. Honestly, you look at last season, I mean, to me it's like, what happened to the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you. I'm all about, you know, intra-conference play, and I like the home-and-homes. I liked it when Tennessee was playing, you know, UCLA, and I liked that series. I liked when Auburn and USC played a home-and-home. It sure would be neat to see a home-and-home series, you know, and, gosh, we could go down the road here and talk about one more reason why you want Jacksonville to be a home-and-home instead, so maybe you get a non-conference home-and-home. But I like the interconference games now. I don't know how far down in the SEC you got to be to play in that game. I'm sure that would attract some people to go to that sort of bowl game, but, you know, where Georgia's at right now, that just seems so far off my radar. I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, if Georgia doesn't win the SEC East Division and play in the SEC Championship game, it's a bad season here.
Yep.
It's a bad season if you don't win the East. I don't know if you can get excited about anything, you know, less than what, you know, what's the lowest that the conference champion can fall? The Citrus Bowl in Orlando, is that right, or is it Outback?
I think it's the Citrus, but I may be wrong, but I think it's the Citrus, but one of those,
I mean,
yes.
If Georgia doesn't play, if Georgia's not at least going to Orlando, even if it's a Pac-12 team, I mean, could you get jacked up to see a 7-win Georgia team play like Oregon and Las Vegas? I don't know. Seems like a stretch with where we're at right now with Kirby. He's kind of raised the bar so high that, man, if it's not – honestly, you know, my thought, you know, and I could be wrong here. People are saying, where do I get off having all this arrogance after just 1 year covering the team? But, shoot, if Georgia's not in the college football playoff, I'm probably not real happy. That's what kind of program I think this is.
Isn't that kind of where we want it to be, though?
Yeah, like that's what you want.
You know, the Citrus Bowls and the Belk Bowls are no longer acceptable anymore.
Or to have a bad performance in the Sugar Bowl because you felt like your goal was to be in the playoff,
right,
and not the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Isn't that, you know what's amazing is the mileage that the Texas fans are getting off of beating Georgia. I mean, it is just unbelievable to hear the crap talked on Twitter from Texas fans that really believe that was Georgia's best game, that they believe that they really beat the real Georgia. Never mind that DeAndre Baker didn't play, or DeAndre Walker, or Jordan Davis was held out for precautionary reasons, or Jim Chaney appeared to have one foot out the door with that game plan. And you're playing a disappointed team that quite frankly proved it was one of the four best teams in the nation and got messed over with a committee that had the Georgia Tech and Florida AD voting on it, for goodness sakes. But all that gets lost in the wash, and all that gets remembered is that Texas beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. And Georgia's going to hear about it the whole off season, and Texas is going to play it up, and they're going to build off it, and they're going to recruit to it. And if there's a kid that's looking at Texas and Georgia, they're going to use it. It's amazing. But I'm with you. You know, if Georgia doesn't make the playoff, how realistic is that? You know, I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you this. I saw it tear Tennessee apart. I saw Philip Fulmer, after he won that 1998 national title, I saw the Tennessee fans, kind of get that syndrome where if Tennessee wasn't one of the top two teams in the country, they were, it was a horrible season, and they started to talk about, Philip Fulmer, anybody can coach here. And then look what happened. He left there after 2008, and Tennessee hadn't been back to the SEC championship game since.
And as like you said, with what happened with Kiffin, it had that effect on the Dooley era, and then however you want to describe the Butch Jones era. But Jeremy Pruitt just got a giant mountain to try to put that thing back together.
Here's the difference though. So Butch got him back in the top 25. You know, when Butch flipped Josh Dobbs from Arizona State to Tennessee, That was huge. I mean, right. He recruited in state. You know, he got Derek Barnett. You know, Jalen Hurd was on his way to being the all-time rusher. And then, Kamara came in. And then the chemistry issues started, backfield. And, one thing led to another. I mean, they started, it was just, 2016, right?
Right.
Tennessee started 5-0 and ranked number 7 in the country. That just 2 years ago, they were in the top 10.
Yeah.
Think about that. And then the injuries, right? And then the attrition, and then the fan base, and then the administration. But the good news is that the people that Jeremy Pruitt is recruiting have seen Tennessee as a top 10 program. These kids, they've seen Tennessee beat Georgia. They've seen Tennessee beat Florida. They've seen Tennessee win bowl games. Whereas when Butch took over in 2012, Tennessee was far removed. I mean, they were 4 or 5 years removed from the SEC championship game. So, he brought them back enough, proved they could win. But the biggest thing that Jeremy Pruitt has going for him that nobody has had going for them since 2006 is an administration and an athletic director and Philip Fulmer that's going to spend the money, that's going to do what needs to be done. Tennessee got off the rails because their administration went off track. Because they had a horrible athletic director, because they put a chancellor in charge who knew nothing about athletics. I mean, that was, if you really want to cut through all the red tape, it all starts at the top. And that's why, and again, I've only been here a year, but that's why I step back and I hear all this whining about Greg McGarrity, and I say, are you people nuts? Do you not realize how bad it can be? Do you not understand that you have someone in charge that understands athletics? That understands how to facilitate what your head football coach wants? It's not like that everywhere. The fact that McGarrity and Kirby worked this well together, hey, don't touch that now. Be careful what you wish for, because you don't know what the next guy's going to do. I saw this, I'm talking about Tennessee now. You can say, well, that's an isolated incident. Well, no, it's not. I'll go back to when I covered Alabama. And now we're really going deep here, because now we're going pre-social media. Before we could see on Twitter and Facebook and the World Wide Web what was going on in all these other programs, so we didn't really have a lot of knowledge about how the rest of the SEC was working. We knew what we got in our own local paper. That was good enough for us. But I was covering Bab in the 90s, and the reason Gene Stallings retired was because what happened with Hootie Ingram, and he got a new AD in Bob Bockrath. He didn't want to deal with this guy. this guy started doing things like telling Gene Stallings, your coaches can't have complimentary tickets. We're not going to give them money for cars. And Stallings said, you know what? If I can't be the kind of head coach I want, I'm out of here. And that was the end of Gene Stallings. But I said, hey, you know what, Gene Stallings, he left in 1996. That's really interesting. He could have kept coaching. Gene was in his mid-60s, right? He was Nick Saban's age.
Yeah.
There was nothing stopping Gene Stallings, but he got an AD he couldn't work with. So when you've got an AD that works well with your coach, don't take that for granted. That's everything. So when you talk about Jeremy Pruitt having a mountain, I don't necessarily agree, because he's got Philip Fulmer is his athletic director. And if anybody knows how to win at Tennessee, it's Fulmer. And you say to yourself, why don't we see more coaches in the AD spot? Because more coaches don't want to be in that spot, and they make so much money in their career, they don't need to be. But Fulmer, he's got an axe to grind. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and he's going to go out on his terms. So Pruitt's actually in a really good place having that guy as his AD.
Before we let you go, we got spring practice cranking up next week. What are you working on this week or whatever else to start getting ready for what's going to be happening over the next 4 to 5 weeks?
Yeah, well, you know, I did a story yesterday on the offensive line, which I think Georgia has the best offense. I mean, it just Georgia, they're so deep. It's just unbelievable. You could field two offensive SEC caliber lines, and what Sam Pittman's done there, and the depth and the competition. I mean, it is just unbelievable. This is the best. And when I say this, don't take this lightly, because that Tennessee 98 offensive line with Chad Clifton and Cozy Coleman was pretty special. This is the most talented offensive line I've ever seen. It's not even close. I mean, these guys are unbelievable. I read the story, take a look at it. You know, four questions about the offensive line. You know, it was up yesterday. Today I've got a story coming on. You know, Kirby's going to change some things defensively. He's got a different mindset. Which I think is really interesting, because I think Kirby's a chess, not checkers guy. So when he says the green light says go, he's not doing that for sport. I'll be real curious to watch what happens there. And, you know, I can't believe we got through a whole interview. You guys didn't even mention the basketball team. You know, they play in the SEC tournament.
We weren't quite done yet, Mike. Quite done yet. It's funny how... And I know Hammonds is out, but the Dogs, they beat Florida, just completely ruined that day for them. And since then, Florida hasn't won, and now the Dogs have just not been able to be competitive. And but hey, they did beat Florida, and that was quite a victory there. And you know, see what happens here with this team during the offseason.
And these guys could be an NCAA tournament team with Ant-Man next year. If Claxton's coming back and Hammonds is back and you got Ant-Man, because what they've been missing all year is a point guard.
Yeah.
And you think about those games they played. They played LSU, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State to one, you know, down to the final play. Those are NCAA tournament teams. And for Crane, you know, year one is in the books, right? Let's face it.
Yep.
With Hammonds out, I mean, they're running on fumes. You saw that. But you think about what Tom Crane did in year one. Got a really, really nice non-conference 10-point win over Texas, right? That was a good win, 99-89. You beat Georgia Tech. Is that 4 years in a row now?
Did not lose to them.
Yeah, you won at Florida, okay? And then with what you had, with that group of guys, and let's face I'm just going to say it. Look, these are nice guys, okay? These are guys I would hire for jobs. These are guys that I would want to coach my kids someday, these seniors. But the least competitive group of seniors I've ever seen in a major college, in a major revenue sport. I mean, the way these guys can come in after losses and talk about how it's part of life and part of their journey and all this stuff is just camouflaging a defeated attitude. It's just like, I'm sorry, you can't win like that. You can't win with people that say, you know, I'm not going to use the word disappointed. No, you use the word disappointed, okay? You use the word disappointed because you were recruited to Georgia to win basketball games. And getting an education is part of the deal. But don't sit in front of the room and tell me it's okay to score 39 points and it's part of life. That's not going to get you anywhere, okay?
Right.
And Crane's going to start recruiting guys with a different attitude, and these guys will move on. With a degree, thank you very much. Nobody got in trouble. That's great. But it's time to start bringing in winners. You bring in winners, you win games.
Mike, before we let you go, I did want to ask you this. Are you a little surprised that LSU suspended Will Wade? I mean, are you at this point, you're either all in on him or you're not. And at this point, is it going to really matter if down the road he does get in trouble? You know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I know. Here's the thing, okay? Another history lesson. Remember the Cam Newton saga?
Yep.
You remember what coach got suspended that year? Bruce Pearl. The SEC was so mad about Cam Newton that the commissioner suspended Bruce Pearl.
For basically, right? Having someone at a picnic that shouldn't have been there or something, a barbecue.
Barbecue, right. Yeah, so Bruce Pearl got suspended 8 games because of a player who didn't even go to Tennessee, by the way. A guy who was an official commitment stopped by his house at a team barbecue for 15 minutes, which Ohio State turned him in, by the way, because Tennessee beat Ohio State in the Sweet 16 the year before. So Ohio State got their comeuppance there. Ohio State. We'll save Ohio State.
Yeah, we'll save them for later.
Another day. Yeah, because, you know, and they told Dwan Mathis they weren't recruiting Justin Fields also. but anyway, that's Ohio State. So let's review the history, okay? It's the SEC, guys. If it's football, they're going to go to the well to protect. If it's basketball, you're toast. You're in the wrong league for this. If you're in the ACC and you're Jim Boeheim, you can say, well, it's not cheating if you didn't know you were breaking the rules. Or you can be Roy and, oh, what do you mean they didn't go? I didn't know they weren't going to class. You can, in the ACC, it is what it is, right? But it's the SEC. And they, nobody's taking a hit for basketball in the SEC. We're not there yet. Maybe Kentucky, you know, I don't know. But nobody's going to, but football, different story. They'll go to the well. They'll go to the grave defending. But it's the SEC, man. It's basketball. And we all know what drives the revenue train. And so, no, I'm not surprised. I think it's a PR move. I think it's a move you got to make. I think we all know what's coming with the wiretap. I feel bad for some of the innocent people there. There's a lot of innocent people that get caught up in this. But what do we really know? I mean, what do we really, you know, is there a record of a cash transaction yet? I mean, I guess that's where the federal agents get involved when money crosses state lines. But to answer your question, no, I'm not surprised because it's basketball in the SEC and not the ACC.
Mike, good stuff as always. We appreciate it. Have a great week, and we'll catch you next Monday.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com.